If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Hey, everybody, David from the Lorehounds here, and we have a little bit of a check-in with Zach and John from the Dune Minute podcast, and we're going to do a little roundup of the state of play of the Dune Storyverse. Zach, John, how are you guys doing?
Doing great. Good to be here.
Yeah.
Dune quite well.
Okay.
All right. We're done.
Sunday morning relative to the recording, and we're all here with our coffee, but we're here to talk about Dune, so we're happy about that.
Yes.
And what a
big week in Dune.
Yes, exactly, which is sort of fortuitous for our recording. We had been talking about doing this for a little while, and then this is a good opportunity. So we're going to talk a little bit about what you guys have going on, because you're covering the sci-fi miniseries.
Correct.
There's not a lot of news about Dune Prophecy, but we can talk a little bit about that and our both of our podcasts' plans for future. Ooh. And then we can talk a little bit about Dune 3. Maybe we'll do a little bit of sort of light, fresh takes, hot takes, microwave takes, whatever you want. We can talk about our coverage plans for when it drops, because we have an interesting release schedule. But then at the very end, we'll give a big spoiler warning. We can actually talk. Let's talk about the trailer and what we're seeing on there, and pull up book nerd stuff and like go full spoiler on it. So we'll save that for the very end, so that way folks can participate and then check out at the appropriate moment.
You can watch your engagement just fall off.
Exactly. That's fine. Well, we know who you are. We can see. We have second sight. We can see into the listenership to see who's really a real fan, who really believes. Believes in Paul and the prophecy. So, what do you guys have going on with Dune Minute podcast? Because you finished Dune 1 and 2, and I don't know, how many episodes was it?
Dune 2, I think, came in at 158 episodes.
154 for part 1, 158 for part 2. So whatever that mental math is, it's too early on a Sunday.
I know we celebrated somewhere in the mix in there. We celebrated 300 episodes total for our show. So that was a big moment for us. But yeah, it's that was a tough journey at points, but I'm glad we got it done.
Yeah. And you got one more to do in the Dune Minute patented format, which is...
Hold on.
All right. You can't take credit.
We can't patent it, because we are definitely not the first minute by minute format.
You're not. You're my first. So, I will forever be in awe of you.
There's a whole community for minute by minute podcasts out there.
No way.
And frankly, I forgot the website and I feel like a dumbass for forgetting about it. But there's an entire website that's devoted to minute by minute podcasts. There's a I believe they're a married couple that are doing all of the Lord of the Rings extended editions minute by minute.
The extended edition. They're going hard.
And it's like a 10-year long journey for them.
Oh my God.
It's crazy.
Tolkien people are like that though. So, you know. Sure.
They do be like that.
Yeah. We love y'all. We walk in your footsteps and we love you and y'all are crazier than we are.
But yeah, there's all sorts of like other minute by minute podcasts. I think there's one for Sleepless in Seattle.
Perfect.
Like not a movie you would expect, but hey, we're here, you know? So
well, listen, drop a link in the chat. I can put it into the show notes for this. We can throw it into the Dune conversation channel on our Discord after this episode drops if people are interested. So
yeah, for sure. But yeah, we finished up the second movie. We're doing the sci-fi miniseries, not minute by minute.
Because that is giving myself a little thank you. Yeah, thank you, James Cross.
That is not a not something that we really wanted to do minute by minute because that would take us years to get through.
And there's long stretches of minutes in that miniseries where not a lot happens, where you just see weird lighting and fantastical costumes without a lot of action or plot.
Yeah. We oh gosh, the episodes and the when we were covering the movies have such a wide range of run times. Mm-hmm. I think our shortest was 8 minutes long or 8.5 minutes long, something like that.
8 or 9, yeah.
Yeah. And then our longest.
I think I edited that one in about 5 minutes and I was like, oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah. And then our longest one stretches and, you know, over the hour mark talking about a single minute of a movie.
Love it.
Did we ever stretch over an hour for a single minute of the movie?
If we didn't get over, we got real close.
I think we were sitting around 50 to 55.
Yeah. Got it.
Yeah, so it's a very wide range of listening times. If you want to check out the show, we release daily. If you're not familiar with the show, we release daily.
Well, Monday through Friday.
Yeah, weekdays.
Week daily.
yeah, it's a fun little project we've been going on for the past two.
And then you had summer school, and you did some encyclopedia entries. That's talked about Globes and Holtzman Fields and
just some of the key pieces to the Dune universe. Try to explain a little bit more about where those come from and their larger or how they fit into the larger story of Dune. And then we covered the Prophecy series as well. So that one is again not a minute by minute, just episode by episode. But I know we checked in a couple of times before and after and during the first season of Dune Prophecy. So
which is how I found you guys, because that was about the time that everybody was getting active on Blue Sky.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And came across you guys and checked in and I was like, oh, okay, cool. Let's hang, right? Let's talk.
And now we're here.
you missed one of our most important episodes, though.
Oh, which one?
And that was our interview with Raul Vega.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Who is a member of Hans Zimmer's music team.
Yeah.
So we got to like sit down with someone who wrote music for Dune and talk just about that whole creative process for an hour. And frankly, it was one of the coolest things
I think we've done.
Nice.
So yeah, we got to get a little bit of behind the scenes, discuss, you know, banging trash cans and where that fits into the universe of, you know, Denis' interpretation. There's a lot of really cool stuff. I would like to add a caveat to what you said about how we release week daily. We released week daily when we had content to go through. We are currently waiting on our next batch of content that will probably be available on Blu-ray at some point in early mid 2027, but who knows, you know, really just kind of depends.
Right. Cause, you will, it's helpful for your format to have physical media.
Yes.
Legally purchased physical media that
we can go through frame by frame because I do, and I will, and I will correct where the minute ends or where it begins. We'll have further arguments about where the minute ends and begins. But
yeah.
And in the meantime, while we're waiting for Dune 3 to drop, and I think we're going to have, what are they calling it? Doomsday? Or Doomsday? It's it's another one of those. What did we have? The Oppenheimer, the Barbenheimer effect. So we've got a December 18th release, which is I think the third week of a Friday in the third week of December, and nice. Marvel Doomsday is also releasing the same day.
You know, there's a an account on Blue Sky. It's I forget the exact name, but it's basically every day it just counts down the days until the Dune 3 release date.
Perfect. What a great use of social media and modern technology, modern computing technology. It's fantastic. We live such an age we live in.
I feel like most people would, you know, that's exciting. You know, they see that number get smaller and smaller. But for me, it's like, it's almost like a threat.
Dread.
It's a threat of more work.
Right.
We have some fun things planned for actual release and everything. And
cool.
We're very excited for that, obviously, not only as Dune fans, but just like to try and do some guerrilla podcasting when it releases. So,
all right. So,
we won't be recording in the theater.
Damn near, though.
As close as they'll legally allow us to
get. Right, perfect. All right. So folks should subscribe, and then you will keep everybody updated as to your...
Oh, of course. Yep.
Yeah.
John manages our social account, which is pretty much just Blue Sky, I think, at this point.
Yeah.
Yes, we will provide plenty of updates leading up to the movie.
And we'll throw in links in the show notes for your podcast and for Blue Sky as well. But in the meantime, while we're waiting for December 18th to count down to, you have been covering the sci-fi miniseries.
And thank you again for the recent guest on that.
Yes. Thank you for the invitation for episode 2 of that. And I think today, in fact, after this, you guys are recording your episode 3.
In mere minutes from now.
Excellent.
This will age perfectly.
And are you planning on Children of Dune? Frank Herbert's sci-fi Children of Dune as well?
Yeah. So the way that Children of Dune is laid out is episode 1 is Messiah.
Right.
Episode 2 and 3 are Children. So I think it would be a great disservice, first of all, to the miniseries if we didn't do it. But secondly, you know, just to the audience and to obviously the connection with the upcoming part 3 from Denis Villeneuve to not include those as well. Plus, I want to really talk about the Children of Dune miniseries. It's arguably better than the Dune miniseries.
I completely agree. I'm looking forward to that more than not that I dislike the original Dune miniseries, but this is kind of a thing we get through to get to the real good one. That is,
and they were like 2 years apart from each other, if I'm remembering correctly.
2000 and 2003.
Yep. Okay.
There was
But they basically went straight into production. Like for them, it was straight through. Yeah.
Yep.
I don't know. It was Battlestar Galactica that was between them.
Battlestar Galactica was, I think, it was 2005. So it was right after.
What was the two? They did a different miniseries.
It was the Stephen King, or not the.
Oh gosh!
No, it was the Stephen King one. Yeah,
I forget what it was called, but there was some Stephen King miniseries that happened in 2002, I believe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Was in between the Dune miniseries on the Sci-Fi Channel.
Gotcha.
That was their big thing. They every year they released like some kind of original, or maybe not original IP work, but some kind of original production into a miniseries. And I don't even know if you can call the Stephen King one a miniseries because it was like 20 episodes. It was just a full season of something. Just those early Sci-Fi Channel miniseries TV shows have a very unique look and a very unique place in my heart. And I love watching them. They're just fun.
Is the world poorer for not having a dedicated... I mean, I know the world of cable and carriage fees and streaming is all messed up, but are we poor for not having sci-fi? Culturally poor? Because I know there's other people who are richer, you know, physically.
I can't speak for the world, but I can speak for me. Yes.
Yeah.
I would be. Absolutely.
Because that's an ambitious thing to do, is to take it. Hey, we're going to take this IP, we're going to run with it, we're going to do a mini series, or we're going to do an extended season, and just really dedicate to it. So, yeah. Because I think The Expanse came out on Sci-Fi first, right?
It was Sci-Fi, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's funny how we've kind of come full circle back to it, because a lot of works nowadays are getting, you know, seasons long episodes of, or seasons long, you know, series of TV instead of going into a movie.
Right.
So we kind of come a little bit full circle.
Yeah. It's weird like that.
In the land of production.
So, you've already kind of given us your assessment of the relative, enjoyment factor between children and, Dune. Miniseries.
Our personal opinion on that.
Yes, your personal opinions. Mileage may vary. And I did get to join you for the episode 2 of the miniseries, which is already out now. My takeaway from that experience was I didn't regret it. not recording. I never regret recording with you guys, but I didn't regret watching the miniseries up to that point. I was actually given the budget, the state of play for technology, and a whole host of other sort of production and interpretation factors, I came away with a heck of a lot more respect, because I'd never seen it before. It's very hard to get. Thank you again for sending me a physical a DVD of it.
One second.
Of course.
Hey.
Well, maybe I'll just clip out the silence and leave in the rest of it, because your a little maker was attacking some of your
a little sand trout.
Yeah, a little sand trout.
It's trying to raid our spice stores.
He's more than little.
Tisk 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 tisk. Where were we? So yeah, we were talking about the miniseries, and that
you came away with. I believe that's what you're.
Yes, I came away with more respect and appreciation for what they did. There are plenty of creative choices that I thought were interesting.
Yep.
The, you know, there's a high variability of acting and performance, but I thought that they did a credible job of taking the important elements of the story and getting them on to television, and given the technology and displaying this future world. I mean, their globe technology, you know, production values, their craft values were amazing. Wonderful.
Perfect, you mean?
Yeah. And then there was, who was it? Somebody on Blue Sky was like telling you, like was interacting with you guys about like, yeah, here's the original props and such.
So, yeah. So I have to give a shout out to our GOAT Dune Info. they like, this is what they do full time, is they just run, a whole suite of different sites, whether it's, you know, a YouTube channel or their own website. They have so much information on Dune, not only just like the story and everything, but also the background and the behind the scenes for Lynch, of course, for the Denis Villeneuve movies. And then, yeah, the sci-fi miniseries, so much so that they own and have sent us pictures of like the original production binders for like all of the notes for like blocking and for camera movement and things like that. Like the amount of stuff that they have related to this sci-fi miniseries that most people have never even heard of is crazy. Mm-hmm. And they sent us some really cool resources when we were
getting
started with this project and everything to kind of.
Are you going to have them on the podcast at all?
With some of that context in the background. I would love to, you know, sit down with them for an hour or so and just pick their brain about how the hell they got all this stuff. But we haven't had that conversation yet. So.
Okay.
We have to reach out. That would be fun.
That would be cool. That'd be really great.
I'm working on it.
So you've got episode 3 coming up, and then you're going to do Children of Dune. How are you going to break up Children of Dune? Because it's 3 chapters as well, isn't it?
Yeah, 3 chapters. So we'll keep the same, you know, 1 episode per episode.
Got it.
Basically, for the show.
With a monthly release on those.
Yeah. Okay.
So we did episode 1 for January. Your episode came out in February. Yep. It's March right now.
So that's going to take us to about June.
Yep.
Yep.
And then what are we going to do between June and who knows?
Well, I think if we want to continue through the summer, I think we'd have to tackle the elephant in the room.
The one that everyone has already talked about?
Yeah, yeah. Lynch's Dune. That's the only one we haven't talked about.
Oh, brother. If you're talking about Lynch's Dune, I am all over it. I'm going to be at your house with my microphone, right, forcing you to record something with me, right, about that.
We will not be doing Lynch's Dune minute by minute.
I want a whole minute with the pug.
Yes.
I mean, the pug deserves its own minute, for sure.
But I have this.
Of course.
Oh, very cool.
Yes. A masterpiece in disarray, David Lynch's Dune, an oral history. It's one of these oral history books. Mm-hmm. This one's by Max Every. And it's insanely well priced. It's like $30. And it's, I don't know, 600 pages.
That is a dense book.
It is really so interesting to read. I've read about a third of it. And then I was kind of hopping around a little bit in it. But it's a very cool book. So if any Dune heads out there don't have this, you need this.
I will have to pick up a copy because that is not a part of my collection.
Just got to sit on the shelf, even if it's for nothing else.
I'm building a bunch of bookshelves at my house right now, so I'll have the space for it.
Perfect. So if you guys do any Lynchian related stuff, it's a hot mess, but damn, I love it so much. I mean, it's nostalgia, right? It's your first romantic relationship or whatever. There's always a memory, a residual memory of it.
So. Everyone remembers their first kiss.
That's right. Yeah. And thank you, David Lynch, for giving us Kyle MacLachlan and so many other memorable characters.
I think so, has aged better in nostalgia.
Yeah, 100%. Cool. All right, so folks can subscribe and get those. Let's talk a little bit about Dune Prophecy. I did a little bit of traversing the internets today. I don't know what you guys have found or heard, but do you have any hot tidbits of what we're expecting this year?
All I know is that they finished filming principal photography last week, apparently.
Last week.
So I expected the show to be coming out in November. I don't know if it will.
Okay.
Just given how much CGI is involved with this show. Hmm. But, you know,
if they just finished now, it's going to be that's a tight schedule to get it out.
That would be very tight, but I feel like it would be something that they would be working on a lot of the VFX alongside the principal photography.
That would be smart,
you know, or at least like getting dailies and stuff to kind of start, you know, some of the basic work and everything, because it would be a possibly good, possibly bad, depending on your opinion on Dune Prophecy, a huge miss for them to not have the season 2 of Prophecy kind of like as a part of the marketing hype train for Denis Villeneuve's part 3.
Yeah. It would be weird.
Yeah.
To not
especially,
have it
especially
out.
Since Prophecy is what was the like general public's first introduction to face dancers.
Mm-hmm.
So I think when we sat down with you and Alicia, what was it, February of 2025?
Oh, so long ago.
it's
a blur.
To like kind of have a you know,
recap
of all of that. I think we all came to the same agreement that Prophecy is kind of the vehicle for introducing some of the more abstract things within the universe.
Because you have time to tell those and illuminate
them.
Yeah.
Like, and I would be really, you know, kind of bummed if in part 3, I almost called it Messiah, and if in part 3, they're just like, oh, Sighttail's a face dancer. Face dancers are people that can just change the way that they look, and they have, you know, take on the appearance of other people. And it's just like, just get to the point, man. Like,
yeah. You
know? So I think it's smart using Prophecy as that vehicle for all of that. So,
right. Cause then you can, cause there's the Dune heads who are going to know, and then they can speak to only so much of the general audience. Because otherwise most people will just go, oh, whatever, you're weird, I'm walking away. And then
for those,
if there's a middle ground, a middle tier of average interested fans who can echo and explain more to the non-initiated, but who are still going to go see the movie, then you could get that sort of, you could traverse that whole span of a viewer.
Right.
So when people ask questions, there's information out there among the listenership. So,
right.
And it would be weird because they're holding Dune for the Oscars, right? You know, so it gets into the thing because Timmy wants his little gold man.
He wants it so bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good luck. didn't he dropped a promotional photo like the day after the Oscars?
Yeah.
Something. Yeah. I'm like, I'm sorry, bro, but this was not your year. I mean, I get it, but Michael B. Jordan. You know, I'm sorry. There's a little bit of seniority action going on here.
And he's just not the, and I've not listened to y'all's Oscar coverage. I saw it pop up on my feed a couple days ago and it's just on the list.
Yeah. I get it. There's so much.
I just don't think he's ready. I like Timothée Chalamet, but he's not the person that at least the person that he is right now. I don't think he's the person that they want representing. This is the best of our, you know, association.
Right.
Yeah. I know he's a lot of time. People, I know a lot of people have opinions just on like award shows and stuff in general, but to me, Marty Supreme just wasn't, it wasn't a Oscar winning movie.
No, I didn't think so either. And I said as much on the other podcast. It was great. And I really enjoyed it.
It was a good movie, but I think between it not being like an Oscar winning movie and also like all of the drama and weirdness that happened during
the Safdie brothers
Chalamet's push for like, like he's a weird dude, right? Like he's just weird. And you know, when you say a lot of things that will inevitably piss off other people in the arts, you're not helping yourself out, bud.
Not at all.
You're really not. Do I think eventually he will get something? Yeah.
Yeah.
Do I think that there are performances that he had that he probably should have been nominated for before? Or won before? Yeah, absolutely.
First half of Interstellar.
Wait, he was anyway. Well, this is not the Timothée Chalamet.
He was the kid in the first half of Interstellar.
I had no idea.
Yeah,
I did not realize that. So let's swing back to Dune Prophecy here before we go.
Dune.
So I heard we're getting 8 episodes instead of 6 this season.
Oh, good, good. They listened, I think, to a lot of the feedback.
I thought we had 8.
No, it's 6.
It was 6 last time because that's one thing we commented on, how it felt like
the compression.
The show was a little bit kneecapped, a little bit because of the short time.
It had such a rocky production history too. Villeneuve was in, then he was out. They changed showrunners, they changed actors.
Going on during a writer's strike or something.
It was affected by a writer's strike as well. Yeah.
So a lot of uphill battles for that show.
Yeah.
I'm remaining purposely ignorant on the second season.
Fair enough.
I want to go in with knowing as little as possible about it.
There's very little information on story out there. There's a little bit of casting news. There's a little bit of production news. They were in Hungary, Jordan, and Spain for filming, supposedly 8 episodes. So I guess we're keeping Emily Watson and Olivia Williams, which is great. They're both such heavy hitters, right? Yeah, so you can't go wrong. And I guess we're adding a few more people, but Allison Schrapker is staying on as the showrunner, which should give us some continuity. So hopefully we'll some more, you know, what's the way I want to say this? Less turbulent storytelling.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Smooth out a little bit.
Season one, I think now that there's a good amount of distance from it, I enjoyed it probably more than I did in the moment. Now, I have yet to go back and rewatch all of it. I've rewatched a couple episodes, but I did a good job of it, you know, explaining some of those harder to explain concepts within the Dune universe.
Yeah.
And just the backstory of the Bene Gesserit is a very complicated thing to dive into. And from that perspective, I think they did a good job. I think all of my complaints that I had with that first season was production complaints. You know, mm-hmm. it was cramming
There were some bad writing moments.
Okay, well, that's maybe some bad writing, but that, again, that could be contributed to that compression that we've talked about, where they just had to squeeze in a bunch of stuff in six episodes. So,
yeah, and they were picking over the bones of previous production, right? So, yeah, there was iterations and mm-hmm. unclarity, and then when if Villeneuve says he's in, and then he's out, then he's in, and then he's out again, that's got a sure. That's a lot of whiplash inside of a production like that. Right. Because if he steps in and says, this is my vision, and then he steps out, then you're like, oh, do we have to continue? Yeah, it just really can mess with your head, I think, as a writer and a showrunner.
Yeah. And I encourage everyone to go back and listen to those the coverages of our show and then y'all show and then the joint episodes that we did. There's plenty of Dune Prophecy opinions and everything out there.
So you're going to cover it episode to episode like you did last season?
Yep. Right. We're going to try to have that same quick turnaround time that we had. Excellent.
Right. So you guys you'll get yours right out. And then I have not spoken with Alicia directly, but I assume that we will be covering it episode to episode, and we'll probably have a three or four day delay so that we can do a different level analysis on it. So that'll be great. Like, you can get sort of two great tastes in one show.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know.
And then we could check in with each other before, after, middle, that kind of stuff.
I would. Yeah. It's got to happen.
Right. Another thing that we do sometimes with our joint projects and joint coverage is, assuming that there's enough, sometimes we do a third podcast that's feedback and or lore stuff, right? Mm. Where we actually get into the deeper lore thing. So there could be, you know, a couple different options the way that we do it from there.
We'll have to see what they decide to cover, because we left off with a big big cliffhanger with the introduction to Face Dancers. So I'm excited to see where season two goes.
Well, speaking of Face Dancers, let's start talking about Dune 3.
Yes.
Let's keep it spoiler light.
Okay.
For the moment. And then, because I know we've thrown around a few terms and things like that, and you just can't be in the storyverse without some exposure to some of these ideas.
Right.
But just first blush, what did y'all think of the Dune 3 teaser trailer that they released the other day?
I'm gonna have John go first on this.
Okay.
How can I talk about this and not just immediately go ranting onto spoilers?
Are you feeling positive? Are you feeling confused? Is it complicated?
I am feeling. I'll say this.
Yeah,
I understand now why it's being called Part 3,
mm-hmm.
not Messiah. Aside from the fact that, you know, Hollywood's afraid of, you know, saying words like Messiah and Jihad and things like that. Much to my dismay, I believe that this movie is more than just Messiah, and there will be elements of Paul of Dune brought into it, and, you know, some of
Frank Herbert's son, who picked up the franchise afterwards and wrote a bunch of books on it.
Yeah, Brian
Herbert. And people have two mixed reviews. We're not going to get in there right now.
Calm down, John.
Like I said, breathe my dismay. No, but in fairness to the production and everything, Messiah is a lot of, like, as a book, it's a lot of talking and walking. There's not as much, I mean, there's action, of course, but
it's not space opera.
Right. It's not, oh, here is the escalation of conflict on Arrakis, and we can, you know, really like lean into that and go crazy with it like we did with, you know, part one and part two. So I understand why they would be pulling from other sources and everything. I have some concerns.
Okay. So it's complicated.
I am hoping and cautious, leaning on cautiously optimistic.
Okay.
That's where I was going to land as well. Cautiously optimistic.
Okay.
I'm pretty easy to please with when it comes to media and movies.
Okay.
So I think it's going to be a good time.
I mean, Villeneuve knows how to make a movie. We know that.
Yes, he does. And the trailer, at least the shots that were included in the trailer, look beautiful.
Right.
There's a lot of plot points that were talked about in the trailer that I'm interested to see where they either fit in with the grander story or how they pulled from the actual books. I don't know the Brian Herbert lore of Dune. I've not read those. So if things are being pulled from Brian Herbert, I might have to pick up the book and read it to really figure it out. But cautiously optimistic. And there are some things I did like about the trailer, which we'll talk about here in a little while. And there's some things I didn't like about the trailer. So
there's some things that left us questioning. why is this in the trailer?
Right. Yes.
It's in the trailer. So I'm just going to say it. Paragliding. We'll talk about it in a minute. But like question mark? Anyway. Yeah.
But then there are parts that really excited me about the trailer, you know, like what's this orange caskety thing that's floating around? You know, that's interesting. I think John and I have differing opinions on what that might be.
I have a lot of strong opinions on this.
That's great. Good. Cause that was going to be one of my first questions once we get into spoilers about that.
Just as a gut check on it, I enjoyed the trailer. I'm excited. It did what it was supposed to do and make me excited for the movie.
Piqued your interest.
Yeah.
And got you looking at the calendar for, what December 18th looks like.
Oh, I am counting down till December. Right. Don't get me wrong. I'm very excited because.
Are you guys at day one? Pre-ticket to sales?
Pre-ticket for sure. We got very lucky to be able to see Dune Part 2 about a month before it was supposed to release originally.
Yep.
We will do everything in our power to try and see this as early as possible as well.
My level of access to those movie tickets continues because I saw Project Hail Mary at an advanced screening. And I know this is not a Project Hail Mary cast, but good Lord, I love that movie.
Dude, my podcast feed was like filled up the morning after with people who'd see it, and not just normal media review podcasts, but like the NPR Science Friday had a thing on. I was like, what is going on with this Project Hail Mary? I mean, I knew people were excited for it, but damn, like people are going nuts. It's like a huge box office hit right now.
I encourage people to go listen or go read the book because the book is fantastic. Mm. And then the movie did the book a lot of really good, you know, did it justice. So nice. Great movie too.
I have to be able to see it and do it justice. I have to drive about 40 minutes away one way to be able to get on a screen. Cause I love our local theater. It's awesome. It's a community space as much as anything, but their screens are not great. And I saw Predator Badlands and it kind of ruined the experience for me because you want, if you're at that level of digital effects and all of that kind of stuff, I really don't want to have my viewing experience ruined because the screen quality is kind of meh.
I'm sorry, David. That is my condolences.
Yeah, and I know Alicia and John are talking about some coverage for that and just sort of getting life schedules sorted out. And of course, we always, you know, sometimes we're a little behind the curve, which is fine. That gives us time to think and contemplate and stuff like that. So, but yeah, we definitely will have some coverage of that on Lorehounds.
Good deal. Yeah, we're blessed with a number of IMAX screens here in Atlanta. So I think we have options.
Okay. Yeah. So I too am cautiously optimistic for the show. Like we said, you know, for Dune 3, Villeneuve knows how to tell a story, and this has been a title he's been thinking about for a long time. And I like the fact that because if I remember right from Dune 2, he was like, I'm going to take a break and then I'll come back to this. And then at some point he's like, no, I got to get this done.
Yeah.
Let's go. And I think he rearranged his schedule and brought it up in terms of production timeline, which I think is the smart thing to do both creatively and commercially.
Yeah.
I think creatively it wouldn't have, you know, I can't speak to his creative process, but if you let things cool too soon, then maybe you change your point of view on things. Things have less important, you know, they change the ideas that you have change in relative status. And then just to continue to build off the commercial success of the first two movies, if we had to wait another 4 or 5 years for Dune 3, the relevance would have been like, huh, what?
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, you got to strike while the iron's hot on this. And Dune 2 was a big success. So
yeah,
you want to continue that momentum as much as you can. And, you know, if you want to look at something that's the opposite of that, you know, the time between the first two seasons of Severance.
It's brutal.
It was so long. And, you know, people, and myself included, were like, I don't even remember what happened in the last season. So cool. I wasn't disappointed with the rewatch, but it had completely cooled off.
Yeah, exactly. Seems and like I think we're going to.
Jarvis is about to go through that too.
I was just going to say. And as podcasters, we're like, come on. We're like drumming our fingers. Like, hello. All right. So we're all kind of in the same place, excited, optimistic, nervous, and just glad that it's actually getting done and it hasn't landed in a weird studio. Things have sort of settled out. So all of that said, this is your chance now to jump out of the podcast. We're going to get into full book spoilers for the trailer. Again, there will be links in the show notes for Dune Minute Podcast, for your Blue Sky. Definitely go subscribe, and we will, as two different communities, we'll be interacting with each other as more Dune things hit the airwaves. But definitely go check out the sci-fi conversations because they're it's a lot of fun. It's worthy for the diehard, the fan plus, right? Anyway, they're cool conversation. It's a cool conversation. It's a cool show. It's worth your time if you're into this kind of stuff. So put it that way.
And, we talked about the budget for the sci-fi miniseries and how small it was for the project that they were tackling. Most of the budget, I think, gets spent in the third episode.
Okay.
So there is a lot more CGI and explosions and action and all this kind of stuff.
Don't spoil it.
Well, we're talking about it in like an hour. We're fine.
Cool. So that's great because I haven't watched the third episode yet. So when the podcast hits the internet waves, I will be ready to watch and have a podcast to go along with it.
So awesome. The podcast will be hitting the internet waves on the 31st. So
31st of March.
Yep. Okay. Great. All right. So here's your chance. Hop out now if you want no spoilers. There's a world of opportunity out there beyond the typical 9-to-5, where purpose and grit come together, where the American spirit and ingenuity are welcomed in places that could really use your skills and your experience. We're talking about the Peace Corps, with volunteers living and working in communities around the globe. It's been called the toughest job you'll ever love. Tough because it asks so much of you. To dig deeper, to get your hands dirty, to go that extra mile, to rise to the occasion and meet challenges head on. And the love part comes from being part of something bigger than yourself, from building bonds that last a lifetime. It's knowing your hard work transformed lives, including your own. After 65 years, the Peace Corps is still the toughest job you'll ever love. Explore opportunities in more than 60 countries, learn about benefits, and apply at peacecorps.gov/serve. And my first question for you guys is parasailing. What the fuck?
Like I said, the real bullshit.
Is it really? Is it really?
Could it just be a parachute from a downed ornithopter?
No.
We don't know.
No. He was paragliding. Okay. He was paragliding. No, the real question is who's in the sarcophagus?
Yes. So I'm of the mindset, or at least my initial gut reaction was this is the Gola hate.
Mm-hmm. Jason Momoa. And yet somehow Duncan returns.
Well, and for the first of many thousands.
The thousands of times, well, exactly.
I know this is a creative decision, and I'm sure there was written somewhere in some contract that Jason Momoa had to appear in the trailer.
Right.
I think it would have been so much better if he was not in the trailer.
Interesting.
That'd be a surprise.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. You know,
but it's not a surprise because he's been very like active and public on his social media about like, oh, I'm in this next Dune
movie. Yeah, but not like, in what capacity. It could have been a flashback scenes and things like that, which is what they've done many times over.
No, they're saving the surprise for my boy Edric. And
yes. Okay, Edric Edric the Guild Navigator or Hate the Gola of Duncan, Idaho.
Okay, so I have a few reasons as to why it's Edric. First of all, if you pause and you then just take a screenshot and you run it through a bunch of Photoshop filters, you can see the shape of Edric and you can see the blue.
Through the facial shield.
Through that little shield. But also, even if you don't do that, there's a certain look of disgust on Cytale's face
as
we go from the casket and then like move Cytale into focus, or you slide him into the shot or whatever the sequence is there. And Cytale wouldn't be viewing the Gola Duncan, Idaho as, you know, or with the amount of disgust that he would be looking at the physical abomination of Edric.
That could just be how Robert Pattinson looks, though.
our RBF kind of, yeah.
No, it's
our RPF. It's my Robert Pattinson face.
It's my boy Cytale, because I, as I do from time to time, rewatched Dune Part One last night while I was falling asleep, because it's perfect for that. That casket retains a lot of the physical, you know, similarities that we see with the representatives of the Spacing Guild from Part One during the handoff and the official transfer
the visual language
of fiefdom of Arrakis to House Atreides.
Yeah, I think John's right.
I know.
You don't know.
I'm always right.
No. Hard disagree. No, I think John's right. I think it is going to be Edric in there. I think the question I then have is he going to stay in there?
Are they
going to actually see the physical bit, or is it just going to be we're talking to a casket or a coffin the whole time?
I hope they move him to like the glass cube that he normally chills in,
floats in.
This was a big question of ours, leading up to the movie, is how are they going to portray this very central character to the next part of the story?
Very important character.
Very, very important. I can't see a way for them to write around the character and not include it. So they have to include the character, but this is a thing. I think we stunt casted Doug Jones. I think that was our fantasy casting.
Yeah, because Doug Jones is like, that's just what he's
right up his alley.
I was thinking, in my mind, it was Abe Sapien from Hellboy is like the equivalent.
I was thinking character. A little bit of the Pale Man from Pan's Labyrinth.
Sure.
Right. And Doug Jones was Shape of Water, Hellboy.
Yeah.
Right. Any kind of tall, lanky monster figure that's got a bunch of makeup on and stuff, that's more than likely Doug Jones.
Who knows? Yeah. It could be Jacob Elordi. Could be. Jacob Elordi is a little too built. But, there's other actors that are out there that are capable. Who's the new guy that is now Chewbacca? Who's like 7 foot tall or something?
I didn't know there was a new Chewbacca.
Yeah, there's a new Chewbacca. So the point is like, I'm hoping that there is a degree of practicality for Edric, and that Edric isn't just a tennis ball on a stick. So we'll see.
It's kind of like how they wrote around in Twin Peaks, the return. In Twin Peaks, The Return, they wrote around not having David Bowie in the production board by just putting him in the tea kettle thing.
Sure.
And it was just like clips of his voice throughout the thing. So I'm hoping that they're not taking a similar path there, where they're not going to show the actual corporeal being of Edric. It's just always going to be, communicating with the coffin.
You can't not. I'll be so pissed. I'll be absolutely furious.
But this is the concern, dude.
This is one of the concerns.
Well, we have to. It can't be a complete Villeneuve reinterpretation of the Dune property unless he overwrites Lynch's Navigator design choices.
Yeah, bring it back. One-to-one that. I loved it.
It worked really well.
Where do you think that prop is?
Oh, God.
Ooh, good question.
I think that was an 8-inch miniature that they just filmed real close.
And a lot of detail. No, it had the moving part thing, the, you know, sort of open and closing thing where the gas was coming out of. Mm. So that was great practical work. All right. So
it's a great.
Yes.
It was.
Agreed.
Absolutely. Overruled. Anya Taylor-Joy.
I still think it's a horrible casting.
Are you serious?
Absolutely.
Mm. Thomasin
McKenzie.
Who?
Thomasin McKenzie.
Do I know Thomasin McKenzie? Gotta
look. So Thomasin McKenzie, first of all, is way more believable to be a much younger character that Alia is. Mm-hmm. She also looks way more like Timothée Chalamet and way more believable to be Timothée Chalamet's sibling. In fact, they've been siblings in a previous production. I don't know if you've ever watched The King, but they play sibling characters in that movie as well. So there's already a history of them working together.
Okay.
Anya Taylor-Joy is, it's that weird, like, after school special, there's a 30 something year old playing a high schooler kind of thing. it takes me out of it completely.
Yeah. Well, that's where my concerns with, I don't have a concern with her playing Alia. My concern comes
Alia, as they call her, like, no,
sorry,
Leto
Alia.
Where the pronunciations are just across the board here. It's all over the place.
It's Alia and Ghanima.
Ghanima.
Okay. That one I have a hard time with, but anyway, moving on. I'm just giving up on pronunciation. And if you want to at me, you know, if somebody wants to at me on the internet, fine.
This is something that we constantly struggle with on our show, is how to pronounce these different things. And
Rabban and Rabban.
Yeah, Rabban and Rabban. And
Well, yeah, of course, Harkonnen, Harkonnen. So.
You're right. My issue with Anya Taylor-Joy playing this is not one of her being like a incapable actor. She's a great actor. It's the time dilation. How are they doing the ages here?
What are we doing? 17 years.
17 years.
So Timothée Chalamet still looks like he's, you know, in his mid-20s, and so does Alia here. And I think that they're going to lean on this. Spice works wonders.
Yeah. Well, it's an a geriatric, right? So.
Sure. So it made Alia grow up faster?
Yeah. It did the opposite of what it does for everybody else.
Right. Yeah.
It is their cure-all plot device, it seems like.
Yes, well, it's a black box. It's magic dust, yeah.
Right. So, and then there's, we had casting for the young Atreides kids a while back, didn't we?
You mean like our own or what?
The actual casting.
The actual casting was announced last year. Yeah.
So I presume that we're going to get Leto the second.
I mean, we are getting Leto the second because it's the Nepo baby, Jason Momoa's kid.
Yeah. Isn't it?
That's his first role ever. It's like, bro, chill out.
Right.
and then Ghanima is being played by, I do not remember the name, but it is the young girl that plays the younger version of Shirley from Silo.
Okay.
Right. Yes. Okay. That's where I've seen her before.
So she had been in like a few other things, but.
But we're going to get the kids in there as well. So it's, I don't know. I feel like the timelines are going to be all
right. I think we have to let go of the book timelines.
Yeah. And, I'm going to give a caveat on that one. I think they're going to take some notes out of the Children of Dune sci-fi miniseries, where in the first episode of that miniseries, there are some weird flash forwards with Paul's prescience.
Okay.
seeing a grown-up Leto II, and Ganyma. I don't think this is necessarily like full sending into parts of children, but I think it'll be, you know, a flash forward sequence where gotcha. Paul sees his children.
Well, and that's a creative choice that I had a little bit of difficulty with Villeneuve in the first two movies. And again, I respect the fact that he is cognizant of his own choices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That he understands the work and he understands a lot of what's going on. And if he's doing something or not doing something, that he's doing that based on an informed choice as a movie maker, not as a faithful adaptation to screen, right? But he's trying to make his movie. And that's the thing with when you're doing a creative reinterpretation, you need to have your point of view and you need to bring what you're bringing to the table. That's valid. Mm-hmm. And that's important. As long as you are upfront and clear about that, this is my choice.
And he has been.
Cool.
Yeah. And he's consistent with his
exactly.
choices and everything. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I can't give him, you know, too much flack for that. There are just choices that are made that we have seen historically, especially with part two, that I sit there and I'm like, yeah, okay, I get it. You're saying that this is a Bene Gesserit story, but also like, dude, what the fuck? You know?
Right. So what I was, not objecting to, but a choice that it's not about agree or disagree, but for me, one of the things that's missing is Paul's prescience and the trap that prescience is. And this whole idea, we shouldn't place our trust in these leaders. They're all human. They're all flawed. We have some recent news about that with a particular
don't person. Even get me started.
And that... The thing with Paul is that humanity's fate is on the line. He sees one pathway out and he's trapped by that, right? And we don't get a lot of that. It's just like, he's a imported hero. The Bene Gesserit messed with our culture and beware of charismatic leaders. That's all fair and good. And that's an important part of when Herbert wrote that book. He was like, y'all think I'm starting a cult? I'm not. So like, let me try to correct the record. Yeah. Let me try to like set some stuff up here. For that.
So sorry to like deviate away from part three, but damn, if there's one thing that the sci-fi miniseries does well, it is that exploration of mm-hmm. Paul's prescience and the flaws of putting faith into these charismatic leaders and everything. So like,
yeah.
Genuinely to the Lorehound's audience, if you guys are looking for I think both Zach and my, you know, opinions, the best interpretation of Dune and the most faithful, it is the sci-fi miniseries.
Yep. Agreed.
You can get a Blu-ray of it on Amazon for $20.
Nice. And then you got to get a Blu-ray player for another 50, sure. Something like sure, that.
Sure, but like It's not lost media is the point.
Right.
Which
it's available.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Paul's prescience has been left out of the story in large degree. I mean, it was barely touched on in part two.
Yep.
So we see a lot of in the trailer, we see a lot of war scenes, a lot of fighting. Which we
don't get in the book, which is interesting. Yeah. Like we're actually going to get some battles. That's cool.
So that could either be pulling from the Brian stories, which I think it is. That's the Paul of Dune.
Yeah.
Those could possibly be folded into some prescience. Maybe you're going to start leaning finally heavy into, hey, Paul actually has the ability to, you know, see into the future.
I mean, they're going to have to, though, because with the whole
Stoneburner
thing, which, was that the Stoneburner in the trailer? I don't know, because
that's what I was reading. I wanted to talk. That was the next thing I wanted to talk about. I just wanted to put a bow on the Anya Taylor-Joy casting really quick. Sure. As you said, amazing actor. And it fits, though, for what Villeneuve is doing with his casting choices. These are all movie stars that he's putting into his, you know, Lea Seydoux, Florence Pugh, Zendaya, Pattinson, Brolin, Momoa, Ferguson. Can't forget Ferguson. Bardem, right? You know, he's an okay. These are all freaking big, huge movie star names. And so whoever he's going to cast as Alia has got to be swinging that A-list.
Well, except for big movie star names, except for Leto II and Ghanima.
Right. And those are kids. So how are you going to have a, you know.
It's true.
Ida Brooke, I believe, is her name.
Yes.
She's great in Sila.
Yeah, cool. All right. So let's, let's talk about...
Stoneburner. So I think we see a Stoneburner in the trailer.
I think we do.
And
yeah, the big white flash.
Well, no. So yeah.
Oh, you think we see?
Yes, but there's the big thing that Stilgar and some other Fremen are running with. It looks like it's a big like a
big pelican case thing.
Yeah, and I think that will be the introduction to the Stoneburner and.
Right, because you got to do a setup for the technology for the show. Right?
Yeah. Oh God. Why am I blanking on who is it whose kid gets killed by the Stoneburner?
It's been so long.
Forgotten? No,
I haven't read. I need to do a reread.
Well, this podcast is over. I'm disgusted at your guys' level of retention is just not up to.
It's been a minute since I've read Messiah.
Yeah. I was thinking about it this morning when I was watching the trailer again before we're jumping on. I was like, ooh, it's been a while. I watched a couple of video, went on to the tubes and watched a couple of analysis videos. And there are some characterizations out there that I'm like, y'all say you know what you're talking about, but I don't know, man.
Well, I'm doing some, I alluded to this, I'm doing some home construction at the moment, but I'm getting
Farrakh, not Farrodden.
Thank you.
Got it.
I have a lot of time with my audiobooks right now, so I think I'm going to start Messiah as an audiobook because I've read it physically a couple of times, so I feel like an audiobook will be fine just to brush up.
If you've got a good choice for that, let me know because that's actually a good way for me to do it too.
Yeah, it'll be whatever Audible, not sponsored content, whatever Audible offers.
Okay, fair enough. Cool. All right, so I think we totally do Stoneburner because we get the whole he's standing up on the dais thing and he's sort of looking down and sort of with a vacant stare on his face.
Yeah, but his eyes aren't all fucked up. I mean, they could have just edited that for the trailer. Yeah,
that's fine. But I think that would be an interesting creative choice because it'd be weird. Well, do you want a horror? Come on, you can't mess up Timmy's face. That's an Oscar-winning face, bro.
But the picture that Timothy Chalamet himself posted
has a burned face skin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
I think it'd be creepy with the eyes. So, if you still have the eyes of the Abad there, blue and blue staring at you, but with that vacant stare, I think that's a, I don't mind that creative choice.
I think you do something with the eyes because otherwise it looks too normal.
Mm-hmm. Well, and oftentimes promotional media blacks out
Paul's eyes. And I think that's a really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, oftentimes promotional media is, I mean, if you think about like the original Alien, it's an actual egg, you know, way back then. So yeah, you know, sometimes and that was for other reasons, but the fact is that promotional media is promotional media.
Yeah. Trailers get edited and there's like a special version of, you know, whatever the actual shot is. So, you know, I'm going to still hold final reservation and judgment until we actually see it. But
yeah,
I'm really hoping that they lean into the fact that like Paul gets absolutely just messed up by the Stoneburner and they need to like show that. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I guess that leads into another question that I had was how much of the preacher are we going to get in this movie?
None.
Mm-hmm.
You don't think any?
No.
No, I think that would be too...
The Preacher is so firmly a Children of Dune thing. The end of Messiah is Paul going out into the desert on his own.
You think that's just where they're going to leave it off of him? Will they kill him off in the end? I know this is getting...
Why would they kill him?
Why wouldn't they? If they're not planning on continuing the story, just wrap this up.
I think that would just kind of lessen the impact of.
Yeah, the real question is
Messiah. Because Messiah is all about Paul losing control and losing his empire, and I think it's more. I think it's more disgraceful for Paul to exile himself rather than to just die.
I think it's the interesting question is how are they going to wrap this up? Because
also Paul has to live because he, you know, sees through Leto's eyes to kill Cytale. So what are you going to do? Have Paul successfully see through Leto's eyes, realize that he is incapable of leading down the golden path. And then
I don't know, John,
like
anything's up for debate. Now.
We're in the deep desert now. We're well south of the equator line here.
No, I think, you know, they have Paul walk out into the desert, and then if Warner Brothers or whoever buys Warner Brothers decides to continue on with it, they just find a new director to do children. But frankly,
are we going to see the God Emperor? That's the question.
I don't think they're going to, because it's not going to be Denis Villeneuve. And
right, but are we going to see the worm?
I would love to see the worm, but I think
bring back James McAvoy to play the worm.
There you go. No, genuinely, that would be
another awesome miniseries callback.
Well, if you're gonna do God Emperor of Dune, it has to be a miniseries because you can't tell 3,500 years of story in a 2-hour film.
Little hard.
So
I think we do get some Jason Momoa steely metal eyes, though.
We do, and I'm still not a huge fan of him being included in the trailer. Excited to see Hate come back, the Duncan Idaho Gola.
You hate right. to see it.
There was a lot of great Reddit stuff, people doing a Palpatine, and yet somehow,
of course,
Duncan returns. Duncan lives. At least
this one has a.
You like axolotls?
At least this one has a reason. You know, exactly. It's not just a somehow he returned.
Right, exactly. There's a dedicated reason. Yeah, and it's an actual plot device, a mechanic, and how are they gonna? And this whole idea of which is what something that Bene Gesserit storylines built in, as well as with the Gola, which is how much of our memory and experience is carried in some sort of physical manifestation of our bodies, of our DNA, generationally speaking.
Sure.
And this idea that the body knows stuff and playing with those concepts is cool. And that's a really cool part of the story. And I think it will work. Again, we're talking about prophecy and the Bene Gesserit and awakening and being in communication with your ancestors.
Yeah,
and then having some sort of power word to flip Duncan's switch.
Yeah,
you know.
Can I place a bet with y'all real quick?
Sure. Yeah, let's go. What's the wager?
What are we
betting for?
A gentleman's wager, $1.
Okay. $1.
I'll do a Venmo to you, David. If
okay.
I think that they are going to introduce the concept of Golas in prophecy first.
Oh, I'm not gonna take that bet.
It's a good bet. I think it has to happen.
If prophecy comes out,
I think they're gonna
be busting their little behinds to get it out. It would be smart for them to get it out.
Yeah,
I think strategically,
it's a safe bet.
Yeah. I don't know. I would rather bet on like the worm or something like that. The golden path.
fair. Yeah.
You can always bet on the golden path.
Yeah, that's right. All right, cool. Any other thoughts or feelings about the trailer that we want to?
I have many thoughts and feelings.
But of course, if
we really go into it, this is going to be a 5-hour episode.
Yeah. And you guys have another recording to jump on.
Yeah, so. we have a whole hour and a half more of
to spend with each other. Yes.
Oh no, we're probably going to be. Who knows how long it's going to be? But
yeah.
Gosh, I'm excited. I mean, I am excited for the movie, and I, you know, December. It should come at the appropriate speed, but I'm excited for it to get here.
Cool. All right. Well, until then, check out the links. You know what? I forgot to do something earlier too, which is that, John, you were on an episode of The Pit with us.
I was, yeah.
With Ian from the Captain's Pod. We had a lot of fun talking about that as well. And John from Lorehounds and I are about to record episode 11 podcast later today. And F that episode, man. Bro, that episode was like rough. That was hard.
Yeah.
really mad.
A lot of ways. Yeah.
Really mad. I mean, still loving the season, but like, oh, you guys. And then the other thing, Zach, is that you and Ian from the Captain's Pod and I are all talking about a 60-year of Star Trek project idea. We're still kicking the soccer ball around.
That's right. There's like
still a kicking lot the triple around. Yeah.
Was it still playing Parisi squares or around?
Yes, exactly. What was the?
You're a nerd.
What was that? No, shoot. What was the one that the in Next Generation where they had the little headset?
Oh, on? The visor thing where they
yeah, it was that like would a ball beam game. The lights yeah. into your.
I don't remember. I don't remember what it was called, but it was. Yeah. It was yeah the VR headset of the
yeah, future. Yeah, yeah.
Did Riker cool. figure out a way to have sex with it?
Of course, you know he did. Yeah. The moment he put it on. First
thing he did.
Yeah. Because he goes, oh. that's okay. So we're definitely not going down that track. Anyway, you, me, and Ian are talking. And so stay tuned for
a lot of good ideas tossed around in that channel.
Yeah.
I'm excited to get together with y'all and just talk about some old Trek leading up to 60 years of it.
Yeah, and I think Ian had the right idea, which was to.
A lot about Dune.
What's that?
I said, you think Zach can talk a lot about this? Oh boy.
Well, yeah, that's why we're in community with each other, because you guys are like me and I'm like you and Ian and everybody else who listens to this podcast. So, I think Ian had the right idea, which is to center it on television, even though we've got some key movie anniversaries, which will definitely sort of work in there. But yeah, this is the 60th anniversary of the original series. Going live, I believe it was September 8th,
yep.
which is a Star Trek day. And then another shout out to our good friend Aisha, who runs the Every Single Sci-Fi Film Ever podcast. She's actually moderating a panel at the Science Museum in London coming up for Star Trek related stuff. And they've got a big Star Trek display going on and all that kind of stuff. And she is grinding her way through all of the, 79 episodes of the original series?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so she's going to have some content about that. So check out Every Single Sci-Fi Film Ever.
Sounds like you got to go to London.
Oh, twist my arm.
I was just at the Macaulay, there's a science museum in New Hampshire they had a Star Trek uniform from the motion picture and some chairs from the Next Generation. I'm like, okay, that's kind of weird. But anyway, in this sort of forgotten dusty corner of the museum, I was like, oh, this is sad. Anyway. That's neither here nor there. So we should get out of here. Thank you guys so much for doing this. Everybody go check out your Dune Minute coverage of the sci-fi miniseries.
Yep. And more to come on that as we work our way through it. And thanks for having us on, David. It's been
always a pleasure. Absolutely. And we'll be in touch. All right. Talk soon.
Of course. See you.
Father, the sleeper has awakened.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up. This one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.